You're listening to the Assistants Together podcast. The Assistants Together podcast is hosted by me, Henrietta Barker. I am a recruiter for assistants and work in the talent acquisition space. I also decided to start the podcast at the beginning of the pandemic lockdown in 2020 to share industry insights and experiences from leaders within the assistant community and executive assistants and assistants who are working at the moment, who wanted to share their experiences, their tips, information, just so much for you to take away. Each time we record an episode, I'm learning something new, and I'm sure you are too. Don't forget to follow us on social media. It is Assistants Together everywhere. And you can follow me, hen.barker, on Instagram and Assistants Together on Instagram. Go and have a look in the show notes. I'm not going to reel off all the places you can find us, but we'd love to connect with you and hear about your experiences of listening to the podcast, what you've taken away, and how you've put into practice some of the things that we've shared. If you're enjoying it, please take some time to rate and review it. It helps other assistants find the podcast more easily. I'm so grateful that you're with me this week. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
I'm fabulous. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh my goodness, I'm so delighted. I've got so much that I want to talk to you about and get your perspective and understanding on. I think one of the things that has really drawn me to you personally is your sense of humour and your ability to bring some fun to the situation, whether it's on Twitter, you know, whether it's in what you're saying and doing. I think that we have so much information that's so, you know, formal and positive, not as positive, that this actually brings such a lovely, unique take to it and lightens the atmosphere.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it. If it's not fun, don't do it.
All right, exactly. Well, there we are. That's it. that's the end of it. If it's not fun, Don't do it. Brilliant. My guest is Rhonda Scharf, who is a really well-recognized professional speaker, trainer, consultant, and author based in Canada and Florida. The best of both worlds, I think. Rhonda was an executive assistant, but she discovered that she was incredible at teaching other people how to use tech in their roles. So she transitioned to becoming a trainer and then started her own business helping others. She's worked with tens of thousands of people in dozens of different countries, and she has such a fun way of presenting things. She's super honest and clear and tells us how to achieve the things we want to. And tell me, how did your career start? How did you get to this place where you're a professional speaker, trainer, consultant, author, this incredible range of work that you produce? How did the journey begin?
You know, like most people, accidentally.
We speak about how she became a trainer, the difference between career, vocation, and jobs, how not to take things personally, and how the assistant role has evolved over the past 5 years. We also touch on why faking it until you make it is a bad idea, how you can refine and bring all your skills together, what you need to know for success over the next year in your career, and how we've got to continue to learn and evolve now more than ever. This is such a must listen if you've made changes in your career over the last year and really had to push yourself forward because of the pandemic. We've got to keep our foot on the gas. We've got to keep that momentum going. And Rhonda explains in such good detail exactly why and how we can do this.
I'm from a small town outside of a small town outside of Ottawa, which is our nation's capital, but our nation's capital isn't even very big. Just a couple of years ago, we hit 1 million people. So it's not a big city by any means. I grew up next door to my grandparents. You know, the high school that I went to is the same high school that my first husband went to. I'm a serial marrier. The same high school that my mom and my dad went to. My older son graduated from the same high school. So like, you started kindergarten and you went all the way through school with the same people. And I'm in my mid-50s. So, you know, at the time I knew I wanted a career like that was really clear. But back, you know, in the 70s and 80s, the choice choices were really, you could be a teacher, you could be a nurse, or you could be a secretary. Like, yeah, you could be anything you wanted, but the reality was that's what you were going to be. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to be a school teacher. I just sort of thought that was the cat's pajamas. I mean, remember when you were a kid thinking they get the summer off, you know, their day is nice and short, like, and in Canada, they're paid really well. So I just thought that was the perfect job. And the year that I was in my final year of high school, it was harder to get into teacher's college than it was to get into medical school. So I did, you know, I had fun in high school. So I did not have the marks to go to teacher's college. So like, there was just no way that I was going to get that far. So then I sort of stroked that off the list. And then I actually did become a nurse, and I went to the local hospital in Ottawa. I wore the little white hat, the white starched uniform, the white stockings, which are just, they make you look like you're the dead body, right? Yeah. And it's just an awful, horrible outfit to wear every day. And while I graduated and I did very well, I realized I was not going to be able to do this for the rest of my life. I'm not particularly good with whiners. And I don't know about you, but six people are generally whiners. And so, and it's not even them that whines, it's their family, right? And I thought, I'm not going to be great at this. So while I graduated, I didn't do. And while I was going through high school and college, I had worked part-time in a local real estate office. And I loved it. The office was empty. Nobody was there on the weekends, but I watched the phone and I gave out keys, you know, for houses for sale, things like that. And so I picked up a newspaper back in the early 80s, and I answered an ad, and I became a real estate receptionist for a national real estate company. And I loved it. It was different every day. It moved fast. It was good. And fortunately, back in the 80s, you could move from job to job to job, and it didn't look like you had ADD. They thought, oh, this girl wants to go somewhere. And so I was working in Ottawa, and I was dating who was to be husband number one. I've only been married twice. I make it sound a lot worse than it is. I'm still married the second time. And so he was from my small town, from my high school. He was in Toronto, which is about a 4.5-hour drive away. And so that's too far to date. So I applied for a job in the head office, not expecting to get it, but I got it. So I ended up moving to Toronto, and I was executive assistant to one of the senior VPs. And when I talk about imposter phenomenon and, you know, flying by the seat of the pants, that's exactly where all that came from. I didn't have a clue what I was doing, but I did it, and I didn't get fired. And this, you know, by the time we sort of hit the mid to late 80s, computers started really coming into the office, and I just had a natural sync with that. So I ended up being the person that everybody called all the time saying, how do you do this? How do you do this? And I transitioned into a role that didn't exist in the training department of the IT department. And that's sort of where all my training came from. So I worked for that company for 10 years. I was a trainer for a couple of years. Back in those days, I taught DOS, WordStar, Lotus 1-2-3, and, you know, all that sort of stuff, or Lotus Notes, and, you know, all that, all those kind of stuff. And in 1993, I left them, and I started up my own training company where I specialized in tech, started working with one of the mass training companies in the US, where I moved out of tech very quickly, but have always stayed in the administrative audience because that's who I am. For almost 30 years, I've been saying, if the speaking gig doesn't work out, I'm going back to being a secretary and admin and, you know, whatever the title happens to be, because that's who I am.
Yeah, I love that. When you're talking about the Lotus Notes and things, I remember having to recruit for roles with Lotus Notes, and I had literally no idea what it meant. I was like, what is this Lotus Notes people are talking about? And I was the same when I started my job, and I was definitely flying by the seat of my pants too. I had no idea what was happening at the beginning. Yeah. It sounded to me like you had such a natural ability to take this kind of information, as we call it in our tech, and process that for yourself and then be able to share it. That's something that is, I think, is such a gift. It's not something that everybody has. It's a real talent to be able to communicate effectively the information while, like you said, keeping it fun, but keeping it relevant. Mm-hmm. Did it take you a long time to develop that feeling that you were comfortable doing it?
No. And I think, you know, my original career path to be a teacher, I really am a teacher. Like I what I figured out as I transitioned into this role sort of organically with that real estate company was I was able to speak two languages. I was able to speak tech to the tech people, and I was able to speak English to everybody else and bridge that gap. So I think that that's a natural gift. And then obviously that translates to being a speaker and a trainer and taking concepts that are not necessarily intuitive and making them easy to understand and apply. So I think that's just a natural gift.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it is because it is that element of being able to process it and share it, which is really hard. A lot of us have all the information in our head, but actually getting it and
Yeah.
getting people to take action. And that's something to me that, you know, as I've been talking about careers and job searching and sharing more information, understanding how to communicate things in order to be able to actually get people to do something about it, that's a whole different part of the skill set, isn't it?
It is. And there is some learning with that. That's not all intuitive, but yeah, you've got to give them information in a way that it makes sense to them and they want to do something with it.
Yeah, that's for
That's
sure.
hard.
It is really, really hard. It's really hard. And I'm interested, you know, I wonder how you have seen things evolve over the last few years. How have things changed and continued to change during the last year? I know there's been a huge amount of that, but we were kind of on that, on, I feel like, and you'll be able to describe it much better than I am, but I feel like we were on that kind of progression already. It's just that in the last year, things have sped up very, very quickly in certain areas. For the people that you're speaking to, how are they experiencing, or how are you understanding what the last few years have been like?
Well, interesting, because I've been really in the industry for gulp 35 years, it has always been on like the fast track. I tell the story, like if you had a baby in 1990 and you decided to get your kid all the way through high school and you came back and work in the 2000s, you had very few hard skills. You had the soft skills, but you had very few hard skills. So this has been a role that has been evolved. I mean, when I first had my first job, it was a secretary. Most places don't even use that word. Some people, you know, shy away from that word. And so the last couple of years have seen that trajectory go really quick, but it's not unusual. Like it is something that we are going to continue to see moving forward. So I would say one of the things that has changed, and not everywhere, because there's so many different types of administrative roles, but I would say for the most part, what people are not doing and what has changed is we're not supporting people anymore. We're not, and yes, there is the EA to the CEO, and I understand, you know, PAs who support high net worth value that they don't qualify. But when you look in the corporate, you know, the Fortune 500 or the top skills, we don't support the CEO. We support the work the CEO does. We don't support her. And so we are supporting the department. We are supporting the function. We're very much more in line with KPIs, key performance indicators, as opposed to making sure that they've got their travel. Now, yes, we do their travel and we still make it all pretty and put it all color coded and all that, but that's a task that we do. That's not the role that we do. And I think the role that we do is to provide a really important strategic perspective to the people, departments, companies that we are supporting. And I think that that's one of the biggest changes. Like if you think about when everybody was sent home, you know, March of 2020, most of the administrative community were the ones that managed that. They made sure everybody had their laptop. They made sure that everybody had what they needed. They figured out Zoom and Teams. Like they managed that whole process as opposed to taking care of their executive's calendar. And I think that that's what's changing.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting, your perspective. I completely agree. When I first started recruiting, I recruited audio secretaries and typists, and we were obsessed with like words per minute. I mean, that's, you know, that was the benchmark. If you were over 70 words per minute, we were like, oh my God, this skill, right? So things have changed really quickly. And that's only, you know, 12 or 13 years ago, which comparatively speaking is not very long in an industry like you said that's evolved quickly. I'm wondering, you know, as we're moving into these kind of very strategic roles, there seems to be some disconnect with companies and assistants in terms of, you know, the expectation of the role and how that's communicated. And this seems to be something that companies don't necessarily, well, they haven't necessarily caught up with,
right?
How to describe what they're looking for and what somebody can do and what the expectations are. And I think that there's been a lot of surprises in the last year in terms of how fast so many assistants have actually been able to transition into more of a strategic role. And it's, I wonder if you feel that it's keeping that momentum for themselves in their career that's important, or being able to communicate that to other people. I think there's a slight disconnect in each party knowing how to be able to really communicate that value that's being added. Yeah. And I wondered what your thoughts were, if that's something that's come up with people that you're speaking with.
Yeah, and what I'm about to say might be a little controversial here. And so when you are working for a company that's, for lack of a better term, old school, mm-hmm. so they're used to what secretaries or admins or PAs or EAs do, they're not out necessarily in the world seeing what everybody else uses their assistant for. Yeah. And so they get stuck in their little box. Now, those companies are very reliable. You might have lots of room to move around. You're probably paid well. But the challenge is they don't allow you to grow unless you've got a department leader or an executive that is not from that mold. So outside of that old company mold, the blue chip stock type company, if you're getting into startups or you're getting into young entrepreneurs, then you're getting, say, again, the controversial part, potentially someone that is younger to run the company, run the department, be the executives. The problem is they don't know what to do, because socially, like if you look at all the impact, they don't know what admins do. I mean, we've got the office, whether it's the American version or the British version. Either way, Pam is not a good representative of what we do, right? And then you've got, the Devil Welsh Prada. Well, please don't let that be real. And you've got suits. Well, okay, Donna's not really an assistant. Donna's really a chief of staff, right? So they don't have any understanding of what it is that we can do. So they'll walk into those roles and not know what you can do. Now, that's a beautiful opportunity to create the job that you want. And then there's a whole lot of companies that have something in the middle. So those are the bookends. So you have to decide, sort of on that continuum, where do you want to be as an assistant? Do you want to be do you want to be working for the person that says, tell me what you can do and I'll let you do it? Do you want to be the assistant for that person that says, no, I need you to do this for me? Or do you want to be somewhere in between? And depending on where you want to be, that's where you want to position. What is your desire? What are your goals? What do you want to show up and do every day? And then make sure that there's a good compatibility between what you want and what your company can give you.
Yeah, I think I find that the ability to communicate how you add value is something that is very difficult.
Yeah.
And depending on, like you said, depending on your audience and what people are looking for, they may not really even understand that.
They don't really understand
how to articulate what they need either.
And they don't know what you can do. Like, that's the problem. They don't know what you bring to the table.
Yeah, understood. And I was reading your blog over the weekend, and one of the things that you spoke about was not faking it until you make it. And I feel like that's something we could talk about, especially in relation to this moving into more of a strategic role. You spoke in there that in the blog post about not, being able, which parts of faking it you can actually do. There are certain parts of a situation that you can. Can you explain to people how you described it? Because it was so brilliant.
Oh, I haven't read it recently, but let me go with how I talk about it. Well, first of all, we hear the advice fake it till you make it all the time. And sometimes that's valid advice, but professionally, not usually, because you can't fake skill.
Yeah.
Like, you can't fake, if I'm going to jump on an airplane, I'm not going to fake that I know how to land it because I've played some video game on how to land an airplane. But I mean, I can fake I'm in a good mood. I can fake I like you. I think most, well, I do like you, but you know what I mean? Most people can see through that anyway, but you know what I mean? But you can't fake saying, yeah, oh, I've done that hundreds of times and not have done that hundreds of times, because I think what you're doing is really hurting yourself. So when people say, you know, I get really nervous speaking in public, and they say, just fake it till you make it. No. If you've not spoken in public a million times and you fake that you know exactly what you're going to do, you are not going to deliver well. You're going to come across as probably arrogant, which is not what you want, because this is not a skill you have right now. When you've done it a whole bunch of times and it's just the nerves, you know, I still wouldn't say fake it, but I would say focus on what you can do, right? I'm not going to fake that I can run projects because I think I can. I'm not going to fake that I can do minutes, or I'm not going to fake that I know how to hire people. Like, if I've not done it, I'm going to own I've not done it, but let me try, or here's what I do know, or here's what I think I can do. And to not try to, you know, pull the wool. I think everybody in the world has a very finely tuned BS detector. And when people try to fake a skill they do not have, it rings for everyone. And it hurts you professionally to do that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's an interesting cultural shift, isn't it? In that we're encouraged to kind of behave like that. I certainly never felt like that early in my career. It was, you didn't pretend that you could do things. It was actually, you know, people would call you out if you'd say that and you actually couldn't deliver it. And it seems like such a strange thing to encourage people to do, to kind of fake their ability, so that they become so much more vulnerable, because of course you feel uncertain. Of course there are things you're not going to know, but I was interested to kind of hear your perspective. It was interesting about the distinction between the skills and anything else. So the skill set for assistants, you know, is changing all the time. As you said, it's rapidly evolving, and that we are trying to really find the edges or the kind of parameter of what's happened and how we're, you know, still developing skill sets. To me, what I thought was so interesting during the kind of first lockdown, the initial lockdown for everyone, was everyone's capacity and thirst for knowledge and expansion of their skills. Mm-hmm. Did that surprise you?
Yeah. Last March, you know, when I saw I had pretty much the entire year booked. It was going to be the best year ever. And of course, you know, the pandemic and the lockdown happens and everything on my calendar disappeared. And of course, there's that major, like, what am I going to do? Now, the good news is I've been online for a dozen years. Like, I used to do teleseminars before we even did webinars. So for me, I've used Zoom for at least 5 years, like a long time, right? And so for me, that transition was easy to just start offering my stuff online. Where I was surprised was how many people jumped on board with me and said, I love it this way. This works perfectly. I mean, every year I do my annual Admins Rock conference, and it's in the last 2 years we've had to put it online, and they love it. So moving forward, I still have one in person, but I will always have one online, because that works for a lot of people that can't get the whole day out of the office, that can't travel, that have so many restrictions to what they need to do, that being online is ideal. And I would say that for most assistants, you know, their knowledge base of what you can do and how to do it just went through the roof last year. You know, February of 2020, if I had have asked people what Zoom was, I'm thinking most people would have thought a Mazda commercial, you know, like they wouldn't have known what it was.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think drove the desire to do it? Do you think it was the convenience of being at home? Do you think it was the kind of the constant new situations that people were finding themselves in with work and having to challenge themselves in a different way? Do you think it was maybe a combination of all those things?
It was a combination of availability and fear. And so when a lot of assistants went home last year, we heard the news and how lots of them lost their jobs because, you know, the executives thought they handled travel and calendar. And when there's no travel and calendar to do, what are they going to do, right? And so for those that were able to, that obviously had a job more than travel and calendar, you know, it's there potentially was at the beginning a little bit more time, not necessarily, because I realize that most people are working much harder than they ever were before. But it was availability and convenience. So I can, you know, tune in and listen to a workshop on how to manage projects. And at the same time, I can have my email open in case my executive has a meltdown and I can just disappear for a minute. Whereas I could never do that if I signed up for a class. So the fear of them finding out all the things that they needed to do and they didn't know how to do them, and them being afraid of being out of a job, and the convenience of, I can just listen to this like I listen to the radio. Why wouldn't I do that? And so many people saying, you know what, this is a really great way for me to learn.
Awesome.
And so I think, yeah, it really does work, especially for assistants, because we can multitask and, yeah, you know, and I think that that's a part of the real popularity with podcasts. Again, it's like the radio or online training. And I think that I think it's the combination. I think the fear is gone now. If you've still got your job, you're not likely to lose it at this point, right? But it's also, people have gotten pretty excited about all the stuff they've learned and realized how much they can apply, how much more you didn't know what you didn't know till you started to know.
Yeah, and I think the community aspect of it as well, the people starting to connect with other assistants online that kind of broaden like their horizons in terms of their career and hearing what other people's experiences were. Mm-hmm. What do you think the main things that people have learned or were really excited to kind of understand over the last year were?
For me, I teach a lot of project management. And so that has been huge over the last couple of years. I've been offering, you know, 2-day workshop type things, 3 hours a day, and them realizing, so many assistants realizing, I've been doing this for years. And what they've realized, especially in the transition to work from home, and many of them now are bringing, you know, people back to the office, return to the workplace, how many of those skills that they have, they just want to fine tune. And so for them to be able to speak the speak that everybody else is talking in, for them to know what they're talking about, kind of thing. And so for me, it's really been a project management, whether it's formally called project management or not, but really the coordination of large things, mm-hmm, where it's not just you doing it. There's many departments, many suppliers, many end recipients. So projects, for lack of a better word, but much bigger than just me.
Yeah, I feel like that when you are working in silo as an assistant, then it's impossible to really understand what you're bringing to, mm-hmm, the table. And in many ways, I think when you said, you know, it's the kind of bringing everything together, it's the confirmation of what you know and fine tuning it, that gives more confidence to really talk about it, communicate about, you know, communicate what you're doing for someone, rather than just take it for granted. When we get good at what we do and we know what we know, then we have a hard time communicating that to other people because it's second nature, right? It's hard.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it really is about speaking the language that everybody else is speaking, understanding, you know, what makes a department or a company successful and how you fit into that. So it's more of the, again, moving away from the task-based role and much more of a strategic role.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Like, mm-hmm, I think this change feels very exciting, I feel, because so many people have had to go through it at the same time. And in other times where we've kind of seen acceleration, like in 2008 and after that, there were certain people in certain sectors that were really disproportionately affected. But, mm-hmm, for me, because it's been such a global experience, that's kind of moved the consciousness of the community along very quickly, which will definitely have huge benefits for people as they're coming out of it. This learning won't go unused. I know that for sure.
Not at all. Absolutely. And I think you're right, is everybody went through this at the same time. We can all, you know, whether you're sitting in, you know, Sydney, you're sitting in London, you're sitting in New York, we can all go, oh, that happened to me. And we totally get it.
Yeah, absolutely. All the challenges of it. Mm-hmm. Now, I wonder, there was another blog post that I really, really enjoyed reading and I wanted to ask you about not taking things personally. And in any office environment, you know, especially I think when you have a very close relationship with the person that you're supporting, the executive or the team. And I feel that this is something that so many people listening can relate to because of the kind of role that they're in. I certainly do because I have a client-facing role too, and so I can really relate to this. But this idea that we're taking things personally when we don't need to is hard to sometimes kind of square in the moment of it. And when you don't always get the kind of background information, or you're not really sure of what's happening around you, or like you've been through COVID recently and you're still working from home and you don't have information about the conversations that are going on, and you're just getting something. It's really difficult not to take things personally in a role. And I know that from assistants that I speak to, because there aren't very many of them necessarily in the business or in that team, there's no one else to kind of have that conversation with. How do you feel about that, taking things personally, what that impact has on our self-esteem and how we show up in the workplace when we do take things personally?
So you learn a lot about me reading my blogs because my blogs are typically written on Monday and sent out on Tuesday. And whatever happens on Monday is what just what I went through the last week. And I literally write them that close to delivery. And the story that I tell in that particular blog post was a story about my son who just vetoed out of a conversation and I took it personally. And so I think, as much as we all know better, and as much as, we can, preach the story, we all are still 12 years old and we want everybody to like us. And we know better than that. And when we work in a work environment, we're not, this is for most of us, this is not a job. This is an identity. This is who we are. And so when we're working with people, they become our family. This is my role in the family. And when somebody says or does something, I'm going to take it personally. Like I'm going to think, what, they don't like me? What do you mean they don't like me? Or why would they say that to me? I mean, I don't think we ever get old enough through that. And so I think a big, and I will probably write another dozen blogs like this on exactly the same content because it's going to continue to happen. But I still need to remind myself that, the center of the universe is not me. And for every single person, it's them. People don't really think about you. They always think about them. I'm reading a really good book right now, and I'll put the analogy beside it. It's called The Psychology of Money. It's a really good book. One of the stories that I was reading about last night is the guy says, when you see a really nice sports car, you look at that car and you think about how I would look in that car. So if I see a Ferrari go by, I go, oh, nice car. I don't even look at the guy driving the car. Like that never hits my radar. I think about how good I'd look driving that car, right? So everybody makes everything about themselves. Whereas the guy driving the Ferrari thinks everybody's looking at me driving the Ferrari, right? And they're not. Everybody's thinking about themselves driving the Ferrari. And that's exactly what happens at work. Everybody's not thinking about you in the role of the assistant. They're thinking about them in whatever that situation is. And so if we can constantly remind ourselves that way, that we're not 12, they're not thinking about you. It helps us. It's not about detaching. It's about putting a really good perspective on the situation. Yeah, we take it personally because that's how we see it. What we have to force ourselves is put ourselves in their shoes and say, what are they looking at? They're not looking at me driving the Ferrari. They're looking at the Ferrari. And so they're looking at the situation and they're thinking about themselves in that situation. And while that's really easy to say, it's really hard to do. So when you take things personally, and if you don't take something personally every day, you're not me. I take stuff personally every day. When my husband doesn't talk to you for an hour, I'm like, you mad? What's wrong? Like, what's your problem? Nothing.
So
Well, why aren't you talking to me? Jesus, Rhonda, stop. Like,
I do
what?
exactly the same thing. He's like,
What
no.
did I say?
I know. I take it personally all the time. I was so interested to hear you talk about how we, work being our identity and being part of, like, in a sense of like a family. This dynamic, whether it's a good or a bad one, right? That's relevant, like all family relationships too.
Exactly.
That work being so much a part of our identity can be very difficult. And I know I've heard people say, you shouldn't work shouldn't be your identity. It shouldn't be that. I've never found a way to disconnect the two for myself. I don't know how you feel about that. Have you ever been able to?
No, it's absolutely who I am. And so I think, you know, people talk about having a job. They talk about having a career. They talk about having a calling. And although those are lovely words, and it doesn't matter which one you have, but we all have an identity. People say, hi, what's your name? My name's Rhonda. Great, Rhonda, where do you work? That's our, or you're somebody's mom or somebody's dad. And the next question, where do you work? And so if you've ever been a stay-at-home parent for any amount of time, even if it was a week, in Canada, we get really long mat leave. So you go for a long time on mat leave, right? And people say, where do you work? And you, oh, I'm not working right now. You're like, oh, I don't count. Like there's this whole societal pressure that you are what you do. And I know we all get that it's wrong, but the reality is society's never going to let us out of that. So it is a part of an identity, whether it's a job, a career, or calling. It is. And that's why a lot of people, I think, feel when they're at a company that they don't fit, they are so uncomfortable because that's not their identity. They don't identify with that company. So it's not a good fit. They're very unhappy. And so when we do have a good fit, that is who we are.
Yeah. And that's why it becomes so ingrained in who we are and what we do. Mm-hmm. I've tried to work out whether it's for other people and just having conversations with them, whether it's a calling and, you know, vocational thing. And I think we're drawn naturally, aren't we, to a combination of what we're good at naturally, as you were talking about in your career. The teaching element, the breaking things down, something that you wanted to do instinctively, mm-hmm. and then building on top of that, the skill set to kind of represent that and to take you forward in that, which when I talk about careers, you know, to me, a career is just similar types of jobs lumped together in a period of time. That's, you know, many people don't see their work as a career, but that's all a career really is. It's nothing more than that.
No, absolutely. If you got a fancy title that people identify with, great. But yeah, a career is what you've done over the last, you know, 50 years of your life type thing.
Yeah. And how do you think that things are going to continue to change over the next few months and a year? What kind of things do you feel that people need to maybe look out for in terms of their own development and self-development for their role?
I think that when we rebound out of this, and I hope that it's soon, I think it's going to be hard and fast. And I think we're going to see the world economy just absolutely explode. And while that is a wonderful thing, that comes with a great amount of confusion. And when people are confused, they typically cocoon. And I think in this time, as we move forward, the worst thing you can do is be invisible. You know, be very visible, get your spot at the table, whether that's figuratively or literally, and to make sure that you add value every step of the way. Because as we move forward, you know, artificial intelligence is coming into play. There's so many things that can take away the tasks that we do that it's, I think this is a massive opportunity for us to step up and it's not initially going to be rewarded financially, but over time it will. But where it will be rewarded is intrinsically. Like you're going to feel like, man, I said something today that they heard, or they're going to make a change because of something that I said, or I'm so glad they're doing this. So you're going to feel a much greater sense of job satisfaction if you stop biting your tongue. I mean, don't be rude or aggressive or anything like that, but to join the conversation, to ask to get involved in this crazy growth, because right now, the same thing as in March 2020, people don't know what to do. There has not been a roadmap on how to do this. So be part of the discussion of the roadmap of this crazy growth that we're about to go on, and expect that you're going to be really rewarded if you step forward and welcome what's coming.
Yeah, I think there are many companies who've recruited new CEOs, you know, CEOs who've seen through COVID, yeah, are not going to be the ones that necessarily bring them out of it into a new change. And that makes 100% sense with what you're saying, that in a sense, we have to ride this wave of momentum for as long as possible and not slow it down at any point. Not slow down the learning, not slow down the development, and not slow down the evolution of our own abilities, not just our work abilities, and keep things open and interesting.
Don't let the fear of the unknown hold you back. Yeah. Because the curiosity of the unknown is the way forward.
Oh, I love that. That's so good. Because it's so true, right? We have to keep moving. You know, my role moves and changes all the time. And I can tell when I get stuck, you know, when I self-limit, because I think, oh, that's a lot, or that seems like that might be a bit hard. And, you know, we have to find people that can pull us through that. And communities and trainers and coaches who understand how to bring those things out of us. Because for me, that's the way that people are going to be able to continue that wave of momentum.
Yeah, absolutely. We're all in this together, as the expression goes, and let's move forward together for sure.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your insight into all of this. How can people get in touch with you and find out more about what you're doing and how they'll be able to get more information about the brilliant things that you provide?
Oh, thank you. I am all over social media. Rhonda Scharf, Rhonda with an H, Scharf with an H, RHONDASCHARF. And if you just Google my name, you'll find, you know, I've got the Admins Rock, I've got the On the Right Track, I got lots of stuff out there. Connect with me online, any medium, I'm there. And, you know, let's develop a relationship, find out if we're a match, and then we can, you know, like each other and move forward together. But I'm easy to find.
Really grateful for Rhonda joining me and sharing so much. If you enjoyed it, please take some time to share it on social media. It helps other people find the podcast. Let us know what you enjoyed about the episode, the areas that you might be thinking of putting into practice yourself. I'm always interested to hear feedback from you about the podcast, what you've learned, what you're taking away from it, and what resonates with you. That helps us get better at delivering content to you that makes a difference in your career. Please also take some time to rate and review the podcast so that other assistants can find us. Have a great week. Take care.